now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're watching and listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, my guest is Ben Gordon. Ben Gordon and I have been Facebook friends for some time. We've corresponded off and on over the years, and in the recent past, he's appeared on Tyler and Aaron's show, and he's also put out a video that has been making the rounds. I watched it, and I remember when I was watching it. This guy seems awfully familiar to me. I couldn't place it, though. Well, it turns out that the video that Ben Gordon put out had to do with him getting into a mysterious accident where he rolled his Jeep, and then he was seamlessly plugged into this evil end times protocol syndrome we have in the hospitals, right? And then he put out a video after he escaped from the place, explaining some of the things that had happened to him. So we've got a lot to talk about, because that experience is not the be-all and end-all of Ben Gordon's life experiences. That just is a small fraction of what's gone on with him. So without any further ado, Ben Gordon, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
Well, Ben, you know, before the show, we were chatting a bit, and I'd like you to get into your childhood, your upbringing, the key milestones and guideposts in your life, bringing it up to the present, where you realize that there was this other reality around you that may not have been readily apparent to anyone else, but was definitely apparent to you. So, yeah, whatever you're comfortable with sharing, Ben.
Sure. My earliest dreams, I'm going to go ahead and say 3-4 years old, before I even had access to television, really, there probably was a television around, but certainly there were no shows about UFOs or dedicated to UFOs. I was having dreams as a young boy, and we lived in the country when my parents were young. I'm the second oldest. I constantly had dreams of armadas of UFOs, although I didn't have the terminology for that then, but the feeling of waiting and the feeling of dread and the feeling of not again. So these dreams completely filled me with this already other awareness of things outside of the normal growing up and ABCs and Sesame Street. I already knew the world was weird, and I already possessed certain abilities. Now, my mother tells a story. It's a beautiful story, really, where I was one, and she was going to feed me, and she was in the process of, you know, feeding me and turning her head. And one time she turned, and I was completely glowing. Like, my whole body was glowing in this. She said that it was a beautiful light. It wasn't intense. It didn't cause her to squint. And she accepted it immediately. She was just sort of like the difference between, the way I explain it is drugs equal wow, whoa. And a meditational or beautiful spiritual experience is more like, oh, like, it's not jarring. It's like she accepted this. So I think my mother knew quite early that there was something a little bit different about me. I had a high distrust for all organizations, anything organized. And early on, especially early on in my upbringing, my parents were very, very good at exposing me to interesting things. Now, they would go through a bunch of inexplicable phases. They joined the Catholic Church when I was 15, and I got baptized at 15. There was a high society in my hometown, and everyone in the symphony was part of St. Francis Xavier Cathedral and all of the intellectuals. So they joined this weird Catholic intellectual scene. But prior to that, My father would read me Carlos Castaneda when I was a kid. So I was exposed, and that resonated with me. Anything with a change of consciousness, because before the world ruined me, you know, and I'm learning like, oh my God, I was born into a cult. I had these abilities whereby it wasn't daydreaming, although I'm sure from the outside it looked that way, but I could transport myself to another realm. So if I had had a dream, recurrent dream of a realm, one of them I call the Emerald City. And I know that's a Wizard of Oz reference, but all I know is everything is crystalline green. There's no pollution. There's waterways and beautiful plants. I don't know if that's a concurrent or past life or concurrent timeline, but I would be able to, as a child, if something was not interesting, just go to these places. So there was something right out of the gates. I was just a different kind of kid.
And your parents didn't try to dissuade you from this outlook. And how did your brother play into this? Did he seem to have similar abilities, or did he have a role in any of your dreams or any of your mystical experiences?
So there are six of us total. So I have an elder sister, and then I've got three brothers and then another sister. I will say that my youngest brother, Andy, has had a lot of UFO sightings, and we've had them together. My brother, Joshua, is the one who on both occasions I was with the very close TR-3B sightings, both of which occurred in 1994.
Where would that have been?
Right outside of my hometown the first time, of Green Bay, Wisconsin. And then the second time was in Green Bay, Wisconsin. And I'm talking the first occurrence, it was casting a shadow. It wasn't yet dark all the way. It was November, and it was about 3:30 in the afternoon. So but I could see the gunmetal gray. I could see, you know, what it was appeared to be made out of. It wasn't this fleeting thing. It was right in front and overhead. Like, I can throw really hard, and I could have hit it with a baseball.
Did the sides of the craft seem to be beveled, if you know what I mean? Or did it look smooth?
If beveled means curved.
Oh, it was curved?
Yes, all of the triangular areas were curved. And there was a bit of a ridging to them.
Yes.
And then, of course,
yes.
They had three white lights and then one red one in the center.
Yes.
But I was laughing. We were laughing hysterically because traffic actually came to a stop and we got out of the car. And it went over from the left to the right side of the highway, did a pivot, and then lowered and just stayed there. And from my digging, I thought I was seeing a completely alien craft at that point. I had never heard of a TR-3B, and it was the director or somebody at New Fork, because I reported it. People could probably still find it. Regrettably, I all capsed my reporting, which is super embarrassing now, but he's the one that told me about the TR-3B.
Yeah, I've seen numerous what I'm convinced were man-made triangular or wedge-shaped craft. Not all of them are man-made, of course. Many are alien or at any rate piloted by non-Earthlings. But definitely I've seen the man-made variety on a number of occasions. Now, when you were going through this process of awakening, if you will, how were you interacting with your schoolmates? What were the pastimes? What were the things that you did as an outlet? And maybe perhaps subconsciously assimilated these experiences and the teachings that you got from your dad, i.e. Carlos Castaneda, into the pastimes, into the hobbies, into, you know, the other parts of what made you.
Yeah, so I think that 60% of my attention from the time I was 12 was focused on music. So I had outlets through that. I got really good, really fast at guitar. By 17 or so, I could totally do Yngwie Malmsteen kind of stuff. So I had a metal band. And so that took up the bulk of my thinking and focus. And then I would always find a friend or two that also had strange experiences. And then we would kind of alone talk about these things and trade books and stay current on reading as many UFO books as we could, paranormal. So there was always a space for that. Now, there was another percentage of time where my parents were kind of at this point desperately trying to get me into something with some sort of structure. But I wouldn't at any point. In fact, my father put together a time capsule that he gave to me on my 18th birthday. And I have all my report cards. I have all this documentation. And basically, these teachers are saying, okay, he's really bright, but he doesn't want to join. He doesn't want anything to do with anything organized. Well, this is actually a funny story. So my mom wanted me to join the Boy Scouts. So I had this real high performing cousin that she would regrettably always compare me to. Oh, he's on the fast track to become an Eagle Scout. He gets straight A's. You stare out the window at class, which I'm actually projecting to another reality. I'm not just looking at birds. And so she forced me to join the Boy Scouts. And one day they were like, we're going to do a march. And some of us had flags, and I'm in my neighborhood. And I'm like, no. Like, I hated saying the pledge that they did. I've never wanted to say a pledge to anything. And so I'm marching with this Boy Scout troop. And I notice, oh, my God, the girl who I have a crush on's house is coming up. And as we get a little further, she's in the front yard. Oh, no, she's going to see me. She's going to see me. So I ditched the flag and tore through the yards. And that was the last day I was in the Boy Scouts. I was like, so I guess to backtrack a little bit to answer your question, I always had a friend who was sympathetic to the things that I was going through.
Were there any experiences in your childhood, teenage years, young adult, that stick out from a paranormal perspective, from an ET, from a UFO, from a mystical perspective? I mean, you shared the thing about the Crystal City. I've heard similar stories, and I kind of have a memory of something similar too in an astral state before. Are there other experiences that you've had that clearly stick out in your mind?
There are so many. I had a dream, which I do not believe was a dream, where I was sitting on a park bench with my father, who is an abductee, by the way, and we can get into that. And we were waiting for this armada. It was always that feeling of dread, and here they come. And the next thing I knew, me and my father were being led into a gigantic military hangar. It was ground level hangar. And we were let in, and there were rows and rows and rows of people. And they were regular people. And there were these machines in front with these gigantic monitors, screens. And I was watching, I was peeking to the front of the line and looking at the expression as best I could of whoever was in front and had like a camera on them. And these people were completely stoic, non-reactive in the line, but these monitors were displaying terror and discord. So whereas a man would get up and he'd be standing like this in the monitor, he'd be like. So it was reading into the psychology of people. So that was a very early dream, probably in my teens. There are dozens and dozens of UFO encounters, the astral traveling encounters. I'll tell you one that happened just a couple of years ago. So I was meditating in bed. This was in St. Paul. And I was doing so for a good 2.5 hours. And There was nothing left of my body. I was disparate. I was seeing geometric shapes. It's a really good feeling when I get myself to this point in meditation, because all of the pressure that you may be carrying around is gone. And I was everything and nothing. And it was this really powerful meditation. So when I did finally fall asleep, because this was right before bed, I astral traveled. I went through these wormholes, wormhole after wormhole. This went on for hours, where I ended up in these pre-planned competitions. And I was wearing tech. And it was me against a whole bunch of other people, entities, whatever, in tech. And for whatever reason, all of these events, I completely destroyed everyone that was on the field. So it'd be like in Roman times, one guy and 100 lions. Like, I was the one guy and I could do no wrong. And I know when it's not a dream, because my visual acuity is thousands of percent better than it is in real life. Whereas a dream can become hazier, even more than whatever your eye prescription is. Things change, morph. That's a dream. But I could see individual cells at hundreds of yards. So I go through and I'm just winning, for whatever reason, all these battles. And then once the field was cleared, I would wormhole to another spot. Like, these were prearranged events. But I had no question about what I was doing. I knew exactly why I was doing it. So when I woke up or came back into my bed, I actually screamed because I felt so powerful. I was like, everything was tight. I went to the mirror. I looked at my eyes. They looked like they were just popping. I was like, whoa. So the very next night, and I told a couple people this, people I could trust, I lay down to go to bed. I did not launch into any sort of meditation. And within 2 minutes of kind of getting my pillow in the right spot, an enormous crash coming from every direction happened. And my ex-girlfriend opened the door immediately and goes, "What was that?" And she flipped out the light, and I looked around the room. Everything was in the wrong spot. Everything was completely, a guitar that was on a guitar hook was on the floor. My sparkling water, which I was keeping in the window to stay cold, had flown to the other side of the room and was like exploding all over. I got up and started looking around. A tambourine that was above my computer had lodged itself onto the arm of a computer chair, whereby to get it off, I had to bend the back of the chair and pull it out. So it didn't just fall off the wall and grab the handle, you know, the chair handle. It went backwards and then... So my feeling, without thinking about that stuff, I started laughing. She was freaked out. And she goes, "Dude, what's been going on? What the hell?" And I go, "Honey, they're afraid of me, not the other way around." That's the way it felt.
Sorry for the momentary delay. It's just sometimes I try to unclick the mute, you know, and it doesn't want to cooperate. It's like where the twain meets between the surface level 3D rapidly going into 4D reality around us and what David Bohm called the implicate order, what's behind the unseen reality, which in so many ways shapes and molds this 3D/4D reality we see around us. I've read Michael Talbot's books about the holographic universe and Beyond the Quantum, which is a great book. I would rate that even better than Holographic Universe. And when you read books like that, and when you plug into the Castaneda material as an example, it reminds one of the multidimensional, infinite nature of our awareness in our existence. And what seemed to have happened in your case, I'm not making light of it, is like, you know, there was this residual of energy that had been stored almost like a capacitor in your bedroom. And then without even bothering to meditate that night, whammo, and there had to be a, you know, a sudden energetic release. And the thing you made about the tambourine, it's like, yeah, that's not a random event. Something of a weird, you know, morphic resonance information field slash matrix glitch occurred, right, to make that happen. Because right. I've had experiences. When you have experiences where you have these bizarre, inexplicable events happen, and they happen enough times. It's happened to me before, but you just laugh at it after a while. It's like, ah, oh, here we go again. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so even the last 10 days in the ordeal that I've gone through, I'm kind of unfazed. Like, nothing surprises me, but while I was talking about that astral experience and the competitions, I just remembered another very important story that has two components separated by time. And I'd like to tell that. So in 1994, the same year as both TR3B experiences, the same year that I learned that there was a multi-generational ET abduction thing in my family, one night I went to sleep and I had been reading Carlos Castaneda's The Art of Dreaming, which, for listeners out there, if you just read that before bed, you're going to have the most insane dreams. There's something even in between the words in that book that induces something. So I was really into keeping a dream journal and lucid dreaming. And I was having moderate success up until this night. So on this particular night, I became aware in a dream. And I was talking to an African-American gentleman to my left, a white dude to my right, in a very simple room. I became aware that I was dreaming. And I turned to the African-American guy and I go, I'm dreaming right now. And he goes, yeah, I know. And then I said to the other guy, I'm dreaming right now, but I'm totally aware. He goes, yeah, I know. And I go, that means I'm inventing you. I'm inventing you. I'm creating the room. I'm creating all this. So I'm going to walk out the door. And I walked out the door and I was in a neighborhood and I started pointing at houses and changing the color of the painting on the houses. I was like, blue, house becomes blue. Yellow, house becomes yellow. So then I woke up. I was extremely excited. It was probably 4:30. I wrote down everything that happened, went back to sleep, and I was immediately on the same street. So I was, okay, I'll change the color of more houses. Changed a few more of those. I'm like, oh, I'm going to fly to the rooftop of this house. Did that. Woke up again. I'm super proud of myself at this point. Like, wow, you're a dream master. Writing all that down. Fell asleep again. I was in a school gymnasium and there was a basketball game on and I was flying around the crowd and everybody was looking at me like, whoa, what's this guy doing? And I'd fly into an empty seat and just start talking to somebody. And I go, yeah, I don't know how I'm doing this, but it's been happening for the last hour and a half or so. I'm completely aware. So I have this series of lucid after lucid dream. Now I wake up, it's 8:30. My girlfriend at that time had already left for work. So there I am, the lights coming in the room. I'm looking over my notes. And to be honest, I was very self-congratulatory. I thought I was, you know, I'm 24 years old. I'm like, I'm a wizard, you know, like, wow. And I'm reading and I was awake for at least 15, 20 minutes, fully awake. What am I going to eat? Oh yeah, that's right, I got to do this thing. And I got like, at that point, I had like what I would call reverse paralysis. Not like when you wake up and your body won't move. I was awake with eyes open and I started freezing feet first. And I can't move my legs. I can't move anything. And it, the second it went all the way over me, I feet first flew through a wormhole. For I don't know how long, it seemed like a long time. I ended up in this classroom, and there was a stick figure made of electricity with a wand. And he was drawing sacred geometry and floating, tossing it with his wand.
Did you say a stick figure?
Three-dimensional.
Did you say a stick figure, Ben? Because you kind of froze there a moment ago. How would you describe the individual again?
Every line, like if you drew a stick figure of a guy, but the lines weren't lines, they were electricity. Okay. So he had the shape of a stick figure, but he's made of electricity. And he was drawing these platonic solids in the sacred geometry, which that term I didn't know yet. And so there's these three-dimensional things, and it was this insane geometry lesson about how the universe is made and what it's made of. So that was one of the most incredible experiences I've ever had. I never understood how I was taken, essentially, after being awake for so long. So fast forward to 2014.
Just to interject for a second, please hold that thought. You mean that experience you just described, you were in full waking consciousness when you started to feel the paralysis, and then you were pulled into a wormhole.
And it's not the first time I've been taken in awakened state. Okay. I've had it to the point where I've froze completely and injured myself in full sobriety. So anyway, I'll just kind of top off this story with the other component. In 2014, I went to Sarasota to live for the winter because Sarasota's full of a lot of good energy vortexes. And I had a job at a restaurant, and there was this young woman, maybe 2019, somewhere, that was kind of troubled. And for whatever reason, she started coming to me for advice, and I felt like I had really good advice for her, and she would confide in me, and things weren't good with her parents, and I would just listen to her and help the best I could. Well, one night she said, I bought some DMT, but I'm afraid to take it. And I said, I'll take it. And she goes, it was $20. And I was like, totally, I'm down. I had never done DMT. So I gave her $20 and I took it home. And the next day I had off and I freebased it, as you do. And instead of wizards and whatever people see, these mechanical kind of elves, I didn't see any of that. Instead, what I saw was myself standing outside of an unremarkable office building, and that same stick figure made of electricity was standing there. And I was like, it's that guy again. So he leads me into this office building. Neither of us are talking, if indeed he could even talk, I don't know. Go into this unremarkable office space, and he points at a computer screen, and there's all this code. And I don't know why it looks familiar, but it does. And I go, what the heck is this? And it was telepathic. And he said, well, you should know you wrote it. And then he,
just to interject for a second, were these alphanumeric numbers, as we would understand them, sigils or symbols of some kind?
There were both symbols. Some of it was binary. I don't know why I recognized it, but at that time, I understood that I had something to do with this. And the last bit of information that he gave me, and I've since called him Simon for whatever reason, it was his claim that my consciousness was hijacked eons ago. And I was forced under duress to write part of the Matrix level of the synthetic overlay that we have here. Like, I was kidnapped against my will and used to help create whatever this program is.
Stuff like that happens. It's a multiverse, and this demiurge force permeates so many different dimensions, planes of existence, and realities. It's been described by mystics as coming from the core of every galaxy. These tendrils are spreading out, reaching inward into the galaxy and spreading out in every direction and just contaminating and corrupting everything it touches. And people call it duality, but it's really predatory in nature. So I've heard similar stories, and there's nothing grandiose about that. In fact, that's not even something that somebody would be, I wouldn't say proud of, because it was something done under duress and against your will, right? So operating at that kind of beyond galactic scale, we have operated at such levels before. Now, based on what you've been telling me, have you ever had vivid dreams of being in a reality that was very similar to ours, but not quite, like there was subtle or not so subtle differences?
Yeah. In fact, there are at least four recurring dreams that are parallel lives. They have to be, because everything is unremarkable. It's a normal thing. I'm like, oh, I'm here. You know, I know where everything is. I know who the people are that are involved in this reality. And there's nothing terribly unusual about it, other than it's a different house. I have different friends. I have different parents in some cases. So, yeah.
Well, you have that facility to jump timelines and jump realities. Jumper. We've had a jumper panel on the show before where we discussed these issues. And you talked about the mech suit earlier. When you talked about the tech outfit you were wearing, was that like kind of a modern day mech suit, the black neoprene, but it would be like load bearing stuff on the front, stuff that special operators would wear? Was it something like that, or was it more organic / technical and enhanced your innate abilities when you were in these competitions?
I felt like my innate abilities were heightened. I felt light as air. There was a lot of, I don't watch like movies very often. So I haven't seen the Marvel.
Me too. Like, I've never been a science fiction guy until the recent past. I like Marvel Comics as a boy, but I never got into a lot of that stuff. It's weird, because now I know there's a lot of information that's leaked out in a lot of those sci-fi shows, but please continue.
Yes, and in fact, of my little bit, taking recommendations from people, I'm becoming convinced that the truth is coming through Hollywood and the news is utter garbage. So they're telling us what the tech is. So I have seen a few things like Black Mirror and things, and it all seems terribly familiar when I watch these things. So I'll have to, when I have time, maybe find the ones that have the most truth. But the way my challengers look to me, they look like Transformers. I'm dating myself. But it looked like there was some sort of high-tech, lightweight kind of, it looked plastic and shiny and of different colors, but everybody was bigger than they should have Ben, if there was a person inside there. I just didn't seem to have any impediment with what I wanted to do. I mean, you could sort of fly, you could leap. Oh, I just remembered I had a dream. Never mind. I just had a dream last night about this again. But I felt like nobody could stop me. I felt like I had all these entities or these people that were also in these suits. I don't know if it was for sport and I was being tested for another future mission or something. I don't have this kind of recall that I hear people having on when they talk about the secret space program. I don't have like a, here's what I did on my 20 year. You know, I'm
the same. I don't have like hordes of memories that other people claim to have.
Right. But there was another time, there were two other times that I remember being taken in a waking state. Same deal. I went from feet first all the way until I couldn't move. And this was like 4 PM and I was just laying around. And this time I don't remember a wormhole at all. I was just in a sea of geometry. Almost like what people report when they take a bunch of acid. And I've done hallucinogenics before, but I don't particularly have a, it's been a while, but I don't really have a psychedelic experience when I take hallucinogenics. In fact, years ago when somebody gave me some acid and people at work were all excited because they got it from some dead tour, and like, this is the best, cleanest. Everybody around me was out of their mind and nothing happened to me. I had absolutely no reaction other than being hungry. I got really hungry. So my psychedelic experiences happen when I'm not taking drugs.
There's something about your DNA and your morphic resonance field, perhaps the hormones excreted by certain glands in your endocrine system and in your brain allow you to have that extra level of awareness and ability, metaphysical capabilities. Now, getting back to the lack of a better term, what they call here in the service world, the mech suit, your outfit was not as bulky as the other ones, or was it as bulky as theirs?
No, they were about the same.
Oh, they were about the same.
It was.
Because for some time now, even at the surface level here, DARPA and other agencies have been working on these mechanical robot type outfits that gives them super leaping ability, super agility, super strength. It's come out in novels for many years now that there's certain special ops units that are outfitted with this kind of gear. And they're probably used not just on this planet, but perhaps off-world or underground as well. When you were talking about being pulled through these wormholes, I don't know if the experiences that I've had are the same or similar or related, but in some of my astral experiences, when I feel the onset of an astral experience coming on and I just go with it, sometimes, and it's definitely predetermined, definitely orchestrated, I feel my astral body being shunted way over to the left. That's the sensation of movement I'm getting. And then another left turn, and then a sharp right, and then a left. And I'm saying, okay, here we go. I'm going to wind up in some place. And then whammo, I wind up on my feet somewhere. And it could be this really mundane looking place, or it could be some perhaps alternate reality. And then when I get there, I go, okay, I'm here for a reason. I'm going to do a little intel gathering. Don't know what I'll come up with, right? But, you know, sometimes it gets kind of hairy when you find yourself like in a home, right? And, you know, there's no guarantee, you know, you may not be out of phase with that reality. Somebody may be able to perceive you or sense you, you know? So you get the sense of, oh, I'm like a cat burglar, you know, but I might as well look around while I'm here. You know what I mean? So, Yeah, right. I could relate to some of that, definitely.
Hey, I just thought of another very important thing, and I have to say that it involves archons. And actually, Eve Lorgan, like until I found her, I had trouble with them for a period of about a year. So that same period of time that I was living in Sarasota, just one winter, 2014, I had arrived there, and shortly thereafter, I got a tough call, phone call. A friend had gotten hit by a car and died in Milwaukee, where I had just left from and arrived in Sarasota. So I flew back to Milwaukee to work at the job we all worked at, while her fiance, who also worked at the job that we all worked at, could make preparations for her wake and all that stuff. So I knew that they were short. I loved her and I wanted to be there for everything anyway. So I show back up at the job. Everybody's somber. You know, we're all struggling with the death. And a coworker said, hey, the girl they hired as your replacement is female you. Like, she's as funny as you are. And I was like, huh? And they're like, well, she's working tomorrow. You'll meet her and you're working tomorrow. So I met her, and sure enough, it was nonstop comedy. It felt like destiny. And we had one night of hanging out. She mentioned a boyfriend. And I was like, well, that's just that. So thought nothing of it. Flew back to Sarasota to live out my winter. And I started dreaming of her every single night. Every night. So my boss from the job in Milwaukee, we were good friends, she calls to see how I'm doing a few weeks later and says, hey, did you hang out with, and she names the girl when you were back, did you guys work a shift together? And I go, yeah. And she said, because she won't shut up about you. She's like talking about you nonstop. She's obsessed. And I was like, no kidding. I've been dreaming about this person as well. I think, oh my God, this is my twin flame. This is destiny. So I finished my work out in Sarasota and making preparations to return to Milwaukee. And by this time, me and this woman have been on the phone, and she's like, I'm breaking away from this abusive guy. I kicked him out of the house. We can just do this when you get here. So I arrive and we immediately have a first date, and it's magical. It's just magical. And it's the first couple of weeks, and we've hung out a few times. And she starts exhibiting strange behavior. Like, I'm starting to like feel there's discrepancies in her stories of like where she was, so I'm starting to have a little bit of some hesitation, but I'm obsessed with her. And I would describe my demeanor in all my past long relationships as aloof and not all the way there. One foot in, one foot out. That's been the major complaint of all women, is that, you know, you say you love me, but you're kind of always doing something else. So it was different with this girl. It was intense. I'm going to marry her. We started actively trying to get pregnant within weeks. And so things are happening that are really bad. For instance, we went to go see a concert, and this ex-boyfriend, which I would find out later, was still living with her, and she had lied. Followed us out of a concert. I didn't know who he was. And I noticed that she's 20 feet back. She's not walking with us anymore, and she's talking to a dude. And I go back over and I go, can I help you? And he's like, she's moving back with me and all this stuff. And I was like, all right. I'm like, okay. Well, she ended up coming with me, and she slept over. And that night I woke up and these black, like stingrays, were flying in my room. That's all. I had never heard of what these were. Like, I had no idea what these were. And I was like, oh my God, something really bad is happening. So I ended up breaking up with her. I'm like, something so dark is surrounding her. And I would see them in times of weakness. Like, if I went out and had some beers or something with friends, they would manifest again. And I'm like, what the heck are these? And then I heard about, probably on your show, the alien love bite thing. Because during the period of time before I identified what these were and figured out how to do protection spells and grounding, I was being injured on the regular. I was thrown off a bike in front of witnesses. I flew 4 feet and broke a rib.
I lost your audio. Let's try something. Oh, are you coming back?
My house is getting broken into. Oh, okay. Not sure where I go. Once I figured out what worked for me to completely go away, which was the sort of like process I go through verbally by cancel all contacts, contracts with all dark demonic vampire entities in all timelines, all realms, all dimensions of what we call the past, what we call the present, what we call the future. I am free from all demonic vampiric entities in the astral realms, the dream realms, and in the void. Then it stopped. So I have to do this every single day. From that point forward, I can only be attacked by emissaries. So they have to get to someone else that can get to me, because there's no entry. But I spent some time removing these entities from people. And I don't feel personally, I do not do this anymore, because it increases some of the pressure that comes towards me, because I've just freed somebody from their host. So I just to be perfectly honest, when it comes to discipline and keeping my life in order, I have spells of great activity, and then I have areas where I just don't keep myself grounded. Like all my ducks in a row.
You froze up there for a moment, and the audio was disrupted just when you're getting into this really heavy stuff. Not surprising when it deals with alien love bite related stuff. If you can still hear me, how long, once you made a decision to detach from her, was the feeling of wanting to, be with her and meld with her, the love drug feeling, did that go away instantly, or did it take some time to process that out?
It took a long time to process it out. And I was still obsessed with her for some odd reason. I was always wondering what she was doing and where, where she was and how she was doing. It took years, even though I knew that she was bad news. And it there was nothing logical about this at all.
Did you feel like an energetic tug or pull, like in your heart center, in your solar plexus, in your loins at times when you thought about her, or after a night of dreaming about her? Would you feel that strong energetic connection and feelings emanating from her?
Yes. As a matter of fact, instantly after the first couple calls with her, it was this unbelievable feeling of being pulled right to her, like an outside force. And I misinterpreted this entirely as destiny. I thought this was destiny. And I even, on one phone call with her while still in Sarasota, he remarked that she was doing homework. She was studying to become a nurse. And I accurately described her entire home. Like, I go, oh, you're at the island in the kitchen. And she goes, how do you know I have an island in the kitchen? And I was like, I can see it. And then I completely described everything. So my consciousness was probably artificially pulled into where she was, and there was a reversal to make, these evil powers knew that there would be mucho destruction if we were brought up together.
The level of disruption and distraction that would have occurred, especially with Tarzan lurking in the background, right? Still thinking that he's her primary. But you know, your ability to detach from her, and that's commendable, because for me, when I was on the receiving end of the love bite, it took years of work to divest myself of any fanciful notions, what Barbara Barthel called the enchantment, right? You're just like enchanted, and this is meant to be. It's like storybook kind of stuff, right? No, it wasn't meant to be. It was a loose harvesting kind of thing.
Completely. So there's another just completely interesting way connected to this. So one night, as had happened so many times previous, before I completely broke off with her, she didn't show up. She just wouldn't show up. And I was extremely distraught this evening. And I thought, it's a beautiful night. Don't sit here in your room, get out on your bike. It was like a hot, windy, beautiful summer, Milwaukee summer night. So I get on my bike and I have no idea where I'm going. I don't care where I'm going. And I ended up going down to this neighborhood and I got off my bike and I found a tree that I really liked. And it was about two blocks off of sort of a main drag in Milwaukee. And I said, universe, tell me what to do. Tell me, just trying to connect to the one original source of love and light. And I had kind of, the bike was laid down and I was just hugging this tree and just sitting down. And I go, I need an answer. I need an answer. And not more than 10 seconds after very sincerely just projecting that out to the universe, the axe boyfriend rounded the corner and was looking at me. And he goes, are you hugging a tree right now? And I go, yeah. And he just, I can't believe he's looking at me. I can't believe I'm looking at him. We had just met that one time when he followed us out of a concert. And I said, what are you doing right now? He said, I'm going to the bar to buy some weed from a friend. And I go, I don't know why I did this, but I go, can I have a beer with you? And he goes, yeah, come on. So we go and sit down, and his energy was that of a child. Like I could, when I meet somebody, I can easily do the arithmetic. I can sum up the whole thing. It gets downloaded. I know where they're psychologically at. And he was a child. And he was very nice. We talked about music a little bit. He's also a musician. But then he turned to me and he said, Stephanie and I are getting married. So he was laying down the law. And I said, okay. I didn't fight with him. I just said, I knew at this point in time that he was in her life much more than she had told me. So we go outside for a cigarette and we're talking, just shooting the crap. And who walks out the door while he and I are talking? The woman. And she sees the two of us. She can't process. Like she had just showed up at this place incidentally. And she ran back in the door. So I'm just like standing there. And he starts tapping his foot. And he's moving his head around. And I said, hey, you seem highly agitated. He goes, I got to go talk to Stephanie. And he ran off. And that was the last encounter I had with him. That's when I knew there was nothing was going to happen from there forward. And the only contact I got from her was a text message an hour later saying, why are you stalking me? As if I knew she was going to show up to where I already was an hour later.
There's so many metaphors to that. You're hugging the tree. I'm thinking, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right, Yggdrasil, the Norse tree of life. It just connects to the, other realms, and your moment before, you're asking, give me a sign, you know, work with me, universe, right? And then this whole incident occurs right after you gave that plaintive, you know, cry for help, basically. Fascinating story.
Yeah.
Now, we've reached the end of the first segment, and we're just getting started. If you feel so inclined, would any of our listeners and viewers, if they wanted to correspond with you or had similar experiences they'd like to share with you, is there a way that they could reach you? Do you have a website?
I just have a website for my music. I think you can message me through there. It's BenGordonShow@bandcamp.com. Otherwise, my other email is geniustallfunny@protonmail.com.
I like
my BitChute channel that the original, yeah.
Oh, I that's a cool Proton email ID, but please continue.
So yesterday I went to log into BitChute. So I had one music video that I made and the viral video, which I moved after it got mirrored and bigger names got a hold of it. I just took it off my channel because my family didn't like where I was going with this. They love the medical establishment. So I was like, all right.
Yeah.
So I go into issue. Because I was out of every single automatic. So I typed for an hour to come back to it, and it still doesn't work. Where I shared my YouTube or my BitChute music video some weeks ago, I try to click on that. It says, this is not, it's not there. So I was like, am I the only person in the world who had their BitChute channel completely taken down? Because you can say anything on BitChute. So then I was like, oh, I know how to check this. I'll re-sign up with the exact same username and email, and it'll tell me a username and email already exists. It didn't. It allowed me to, as if my channel never existed. I signed in with the same criteria. So I wrote to BitChute, and they got back fairly fast, and they said, please send a screenshot of your channel. And I said, I can't. It doesn't exist anymore. And I gave my password, the channel name, and the unique address for my music video. And then they responded and said, we can't find your channel.
Wow. So it sounds like it was yanked. Well, we've reached the end of a fascinating first segment with our guest, Ben Gordon. To our dear listeners and viewers out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.